This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. It wouldn't be Christmas without the Nutcracker, full of memorable moments, like this piece from the Chinese dance scene in Act Two. Some ballet companies have been making changes in recent years, updating the choreography, costuming, and makeup to eliminate Asian stereotypes or caricatures that some call yellow face.
In 1944, representation of non-Caucasian culture was caricatured in theater. What was acceptable back then, though, is certainly not acceptable now in the 21st century.
Adam Skloot is the artistic director of Ballet West. We'll hear more from him later in our backstage interview at the Kennedy Center. Updating the Nutcracker is part of a broader effort to re-examine how people of color are portrayed in the performing arts. How should we present classic ballets and musicals with offensive or racist caricatures to today's diverse audiences? I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Capital One. Here's Sarah Strauss, head of fraud at Capital One, on how the CreditWise app helps users take action after receiving one of its automatic credit alerts.
It's not just an alert, but it's also, here are the next steps that we recommend you do. And so hopefully that's giving our users the opportunity to feel empowered to go after the issue and resolve it.
CreditWise is free for everyone, whether you're a Capital One customer or not. You can find CreditWise in your app or Play Store now.
Joining us from New York is Phil Chan, an arts administrator and activist. He's a former dancer and the co-founder of the campaign Final Bow for Yellowface. He's also the director of programming for Ivy, a professional membership organization focused on continuing education. Phil, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Georgina Pasgogin, a soloist with the New York City Ballet. She's known by her colleagues as the Rogue Ballerina, and she is the co-founder of the Final Bow for Yellowface campaign with Phil. Georgina, welcome.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Give us a sense, Phil, of what you believe was wrong about the original choreography that's been used, the makeup, the costuming. Clarify that for us a bit.
Sure. I think the big issue for us as we've been thinking about this issue was, where is the sourcing? A lot of the sources were based on secondary sources that are offensive. If you actually go back to the choreography from 1892, which we were privileged enough to work with, Doug Fullington out of Pacific Northwest Ballet, he's an expert on the Stepanov notation, which was a way of codifying dance in the written form. So he actually went back to the notations that survived from the early 20th century and was able to restage the original tea dance from the 1892 production. And what we found was it wasn't chinky at all. It was playful. It was musical. It was technically very challenging, but it had the flavor of character as opposed to caricature. So I think that's, for us, the line is productions that are able to be respectful, look towards some sense of first primary source authenticity, and then finding a way to appreciate that within the ballet as opposed to appropriate it from a secondary source.
I have to say, as a non-Asian person, as an African-American, hearing that word, and I hesitate to even repeat it, chinky, it kind of cuts really deep. But Georgina Pasgogin, I can only imagine how much deeper it may have cut for you as someone who identifies as Asian-American and has performed this Chinese tea scene before.
Yes, my experience having danced this particular divertissement was an interesting journey for me, because here I am, a core dancer at this point, and getting a chance to perform a featured role in Nutcracker and kind of step out from the large group of dancers. And it is doing choreography that made me slightly uncomfortable. And I had to find a way in myself to... I didn't realize that I was deflecting, but what happened is that I made a caricature out of the caricature. I ended up dancing that dance so full out that at one point my head ballet mistress came back and gave me the note that I had to tone it down, that nobody was watching the principal man anymore. And I realized that now, that that was all a deflection from this microaggression that I felt that was being put on me, and I had no resource, no way to verbalize this uncomfortable feeling.
Georgina, was it just the choreography that bothered you? What about the costuming and the makeup that you had to wear for this scene?
It was more than just the choreography. The costuming, I had to put on a geisha wig. I am Asian American, so my makeup didn't change all that much, but I had seen other dancers. It's the only divertissement in which the dancers are asked to change their race in terms of makeup. So make your eyes even more slanted. And that made me uncomfortable.
Phil, let me come back to you, particularly with some of the specific images in The Nutcracker and that have frankly become part of kind of the stereotypical Asian tropes that we've seen in a lot of culture. For instance, this conical hat, kind of the upside-down cone-shaped hat that used to be ubiquitous in this Chinese scene. I understand that's problematic, but for cultural reasons that I think non-Asian people might not know. Can you explain that?
Well, I think that there's... I think artistic directors who are restaging this ballet, they have a choice on how to represent Asians. So let's actually break down what we're looking at here. So this sort of rice paddy hat is something that like a common person would wear in the field to keep the sun off their back, off their face. It's a real hat that real Asians wear. It was also a hat that was worn by many laborers in the 1880s who were coming over, and it sort of fell into a lot of the imagery that was around the Chinese Exclusion Act, the sort of yellow peril of Asians coming across the Pacific Ocean and marrying our women and changing our society and bringing sort of their ways here. So a part of that was adopting the popular images of the time, which was this sort of workman's hat, but also like the Chinese queue, which was a symbol of oppression from the Qing Dynasty. A lot of the laborers had to keep their hair in that style. So it wasn't necessarily that they had any pride in looking like this. That was actually mandated by penalty of death. So keeping those things in mind and then seeing that on stage, and it looks like every other country gets to have a royalty or something regal represented. So, you know, the Spanish dancers, the Russian dancers, but then you get to Chinese and it's like it's this worker, you know, who's in the field, who's this oppressed image that was also used to kind of keep Asians down. So it just seems like a, you know, out of place in the Kingdom of Sweets.
Georgina, tell us more about this campaign, The Final Bow for Yellow Face. It involves a pledge that you're asking ballet companies to sign. What's in that pledge?
So in the pledge, it basically says, I am a fan of ballet, love the art form of ballet, and I stand behind this endeavor to make it inclusive for everyone moving forward.
How many companies have signed on so far?
We've actually had quite a long list so far of early leaders. Atlanta Ballet, Pennsylvania Ballet, of course, New York City Ballet, Louisville Ballet, Oregon Ballet Theater, Pacific Northwest Ballet, Dance Theater of Harlem, Ballet Theater of Indiana, Boston Ballet, Sacramento Ballet, Ballet West, and of course, the Washington Ballet in D.C. So those were all among some of the early companies to sign on board. It actually came about from a discussion with Peter Martins, the then artistic director at New York City Ballet. He called us in to have a conversation about the Chinese variation in response to a lot of letters that the company had received asking for changes. And, you know, to give credit where it's due, Peter really thought a lot about this, and we talked a lot about the history of representing Asians on stage, the choreography, the costuming, the makeup, and he actually made those changes in 2017. And so for Georgina and I, when we were leaving that process, we started to think, well, if Peter Martins with the iconic Balanchine production is willing to change, why not every other company in the country?
By the way, by way of context, Phil mentioned Peter Martins, the former head of the New York City Ballet. By way of full context, we should note that he did resign from the ballet after dancers accused him of sexual and physical misconduct. Martins denied those charges, and the ballet company said its investigation did not corroborate the allegations of harassment or violence. Georgina, I'd love you to respond to Michael's email. Michael writes, "Where do we draw the line between free thought and a person's right not to be offended?" Georgina?
First of all, that's a beautiful question to ask. And my first response is that the art form of ballet is ever evolving. These performances are live. And what I view as a wonderful ballet is a ballet that withstands the warping of time and how our views of society change.
Phil, how would you respond to that?
I think there, the line here that we need to think about is really character versus caricature. A lot of these classical works were created by Western composers, Western choreographers, with a very specific view of the world, with better access to the world today, with our understanding of Asian culture. Why can't we replace the caricature with character? Why can't we actually go to authentic primary sources and find ways for it to be a celebration of culture while retaining the classicism of ballet? The original steps, in many cases, only need sort of minor tweaks. So it really is about that. If you look also in terms of the larger context, I know Harvard recently, in their admissions policy, they were just cited for ranking Asian Americans as lowest among personality. You look at Crazy Rich Asians, the first Hollywood film in 25 years since Joy Luck Club to feature an all-Asian cast. There is sort of limited views on nuance of how we look at Asian Americans. And so for us, there is a real impact in the real world. So looking back to our community, we just wanted to make sure that if every American across the country gets access to Nutcracker as one of their primary outlets of being exposed to quote-unquote Asian culture, that they're at least getting something that's authentic and celebratory as opposed to offensive and caricatured.
I do hear you in terms of counteracting those caricatures. I remember that they had to deal with this with some of the old Warner Brothers Looney Tunes cartoons. If you bought one of the old box sets back when they released VHS tapes, there was a little prologue, you can find it on YouTube, that Whoopi Goldberg does. And she explains that some of the cartoons have caricatures that fit the cultural views of their time. And she says something to the effect of, now these stereotypes were wrong then and they're wrong now, but removing them from this collection would be the same as acting as if they had never existed. So we've left them in their original form to accurately reflect the times in which they emerged. Phil, is there anything to that as it relates to ballet or musical theater?
Absolutely. I think that it's so interesting to watch the life of a work. If you have a work of theater or a work of dance, it does change throughout time because it is live performance. So part of that is being able to see where a piece was and how it responded to the society that it was in. It's not like these pieces are lost. If someone, you know, here comes the PC police and now it's all gone. It's not quite that way. These things still exist out there. The question is, what are we choosing to put on our stages now? If you think about ballet as an art form in America, we really do need the Asian American community to be involved. We need Asian donors. We need Asian students. We need Asian audience members. And if the only representation they get at the table is an outdated stereotype, it doesn't bode well for the future of growth in terms of diversity for Asian Americans in the field.
I want to hear more about how one ballet company is rethinking the Nutcracker. But before I do, Georgina, why focus on the Nutcracker? Why that program?
Because the Nutcracker is the most accessible ballet to the entire country. There are, I believe, over 120 different productions. And for a lot of reasons, one mainly is that this is a production that parents bring their children to. And in doing that, they are giving sometimes the first look at different cultures. And this is a place where Phil and I both recognize that we could make an impact in our art form to change for the better, not to just change art to change art, but to change to present cultures forward in a way that presents them with the view of a fully global citizens' lens.
We're trying to make the ritual more inclusive.
Well, in terms of that effort toward inclusivity, last week 1A was invited to the Kennedy Center here in Washington by Ballet West, which is a dance company based in Salt Lake City. We were invited to see its version of the Nutcracker. Like the New York City Ballet, it also changed the choreography, makeup, and costuming of the Chinese dance scene. We met up with some of the performers, with a makeup artist, and the artistic director to talk about why they made the changes they did. Now, Ballet West was one of the first companies to sign this final bow for Yellowface pledge, but the changes began long before the pledge. Let's hear a little bit more from Adam Skloot, who is Ballet West's artistic director.
In 2008, I already wanted to start changing this version. The version was full of, while exciting dancing, spinning parasols, shuffling feet, bobbing heads, pointy hats, every caricature imaginable. And I thought, this is not right. So I immediately got rid of the bobbing heads and the shuffling feet, and then little by little really tried to figure out what the next steps were so that I could create a version of this Chinese dance that at once honored this great piece of choreography from 1944, but celebrated the Chinese culture versus mocking it.
Skloot said he wanted to change the choreography and costuming to be more respectful of Chinese culture, but first, he had to get permission. Here's more of our conversation with Adam Skloot, the artistic director of Ballet West.
The original version had been created in 1944 by Willem Christensen, one of the Christensen brothers. He had founded the San Francisco Ballet, and then he moved back to Utah, where the Christensen brothers were born, to found Ballet West. He brought his Nutcracker from San Francisco, his 1944 Nutcracker, back to Ballet West. At the time that he left San Francisco, his brother Lou took over the San Francisco Ballet, and Lou created his own version of the Nutcracker. And the Chinese dance that he created for it was very much based on the Chinese New Year's that he saw in San Francisco's Chinatown. Imagine 10, 12 people working an amazing, elaborate, ornate silk dragon with a huge head around the streets, firecrackers going off all over the place. And he felt like this was a great celebration. And he created his version where he used this wonderful Chinese dragon, street dragon, as is often called, and he brought in a Chinese warrior to battle the dragon. And this was this brief little variation. I loved this variation, and I thought, this is, to me, much more a celebration of the Chinese culture than it is a mockery. And so I went to the Christensen family and asked if I could interpolate Lou Christensen's version of the Chinese dance into Willem Christensen's overall production of the Nutcracker. And at first they actually were not that into it. They were saying, you're trying to change our father's choreography. You know, we're not sure that this is going to work. But I spoke to them long and hard about my reasoning, my feelings, my wanting to honor his choreography as well as create a more, celebratory version of the Chinese dance and a representation of Chinese culture. There are many other steps that I took, including going to his former ballet mistress, Benet Arnold, and she had said to me, you know, the Christensen brothers stole from one another all the time and went back and forth. I really think it's fine because we can't tell at this point what is Lou's choreography and what is Willem's choreography. So I thought, okay, great. So I'm just going to put it in. It's been a great success, because the dragon in and of itself is such a fun and exciting thing for audiences to see.
We're hearing from Adam Skloot, the artistic director of Ballet West, in the conversation we had with him last week when Ballet West brought its production of The Nutcracker to the Kennedy Center here in Washington. Now, there were other aspects of the production that Adam Skloot and Ballet West had to work around, including that conical hat, the stereotypical long mustache. Those were eventually replaced with a Peking opera warrior mask, and Adam Skloot told us why.
The warrior was a more complicated aspect that we were trying to work on. At first, we had the warrior dressed in a sort of different fashion, and his makeup still remained makeup that was trying to create a non-Asian into an Asian, shall we say, you know, with a long mustache, what we call from the movies a Fu Manchu mustache, and creating eye makeup to create more Asian eyes and all of those things. And we worked hard to change that. Last year, we went into a big effort of looking at different masks from the Peking Opera. Masks of great warriors that in the opera they would present a look of a great warrior. And I loved this idea. The masks don't cover the entire face. So now we could put anyone into that makeup, and hopefully when they're doing the character of the Chinese warrior, that they are able to present this great, strong, powerful, elegant representation of Chinese culture, no matter what background they come from.
I'd love to get some reaction from Georgina Pasgogin and Phil Chan to some of the changes that Ballet West has made in just a moment, but we mentioned the changes to the costume, that Peking Opera warrior mask. When we saw Ballet West last week, Skloot brought us backstage to meet Yancy Quick, who is the wig and makeup master, and we saw the changes in makeup for the China scene.
That's for sure.
So what we're doing right now is creating makeup that looks like a mask from the Peking Opera. We're not trying to make the dancer look like he is of Asian descent.
Yeah, I mean, this is a totally different style from what it used to look like. Because when I stepped into this job, I inherited the makeup designs that were, you know, left from the past. And, you know, under Adam's guidance, we started changing the conversation about it. The photo that used to exist was basically, you know, a yellower skin tone and extend your eyes, and it was very much probably what would have been considered yellow face. So to now be in a place where we're honoring a culture instead of trying to transform somebody's ethnicity, I think is a really powerful step forward as a company and hopefully as an art form. Because while ballet is steeped in history, I love that we're still moving that forward, honoring the past, and moving forward, you know, honoring a culture instead of misrepresenting someone's heritage.
That's Yancy Quick, the wig and makeup master for Ballet West, and its artistic director, Adam Skloot. Thanks to Ballet West for letting us backstage at the Kennedy Center. All right, Phil, Georgina, you've been very patient while we spent that time with Ballet West. I'd love to get your reactions, starting with you, Georgina, to what Ballet West has been doing to update its production. What do you think?
I'm extremely impressed by the depth of knowledge that Adam has put in, the amount of research, and also the humility it takes to ask questions and to learn and to apply and maybe make mistakes and then continue to be able to further adapt and change until you find what works best.
Phil, let me get your reactions. I also wonder whether or not with this pledge, the final bow for Yellowface, whether that comes with suggestions on what companies should do, or do you just kind of leave it to companies like Ballet West to find their own way?
Yeah, sure. So on the pledge site, which is www.yellowface.org, we actually had a Nutcracker section, which includes notes on how to update the choreography, how to do respectful costuming. So really giving companies who might not have the resources in their community to just start thinking about it. I think what Adam did is really incredible with Ballet West. I have studied Peking Opera in Beijing and definitely saw some throwbacks to dropping a lot of those spears on my feet and stuff when watching the dancers work. So that was really nice to see as well.
Just looking at the website, it's got this little icon of the stereotypical, that conical hat and the Fu Manchu mustache. And it also has pictures of more authentic Chinese cultural images. It's almost hard to look at. Like once you're aware of it, you kind of can't unsee it.
Yeah, I think that was the point for us. It's the graphic we chose. It's sort of cute until you really think about it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a raised awareness, which is all we're hoping for with this movement.
Dave tweeted, "I take it this means the Mikado is no more." We'll talk about the Mikado and the King and I and other such productions that are dealing with these same issues in just a moment. Stay close.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Hinge. Hinge is the dating app that's great at one thing, setting you up on great dates. And they're not just saying that. On Hinge, 3 out of 4 first dates lead to second dates. They are the number one mobile first dating app mentioned in the New York Times wedding section. So if you're looking for a BFF, a job, a pen pal, or a hookup, Hinge isn't the place for you. Hinge is exclusively designed to get you out on great dates. Download Hinge in the Apple Store or Google Play.
Let's add one more voice to our conversation. Joining us now from Minnesota Public Radio is Josephine Lee, a professor of English and Asian American Studies at the University of Minnesota. She is the author of The Japan of Pure Invention, Gilbert and Sullivan's The Mikado, and Performing Asian America, Race and Ethnicity on the Contemporary Stage. Professor Lee, welcome to 1A.
It's great to be here.
So you heard what Adam Skloot, the artistic director for Ballet West, said that they have been doing. What do you make of the changes that were made?
I think it's really wonderful that people are beginning to put some energy into thinking about how to redo these traditional entertainments, which I think in some ways are surprisingly not quite so as traditional as we think. I think the Nutcracker, as people have looked into it, you know, when it came out in 1892, it was very different from the versions we have today. Jennifer Fisher has written a book about how the Nutcracker became a particularly American tradition around the holidays, and how the versions that we see today, again, are very different from the original version that was performed in the late 19th century.
Does that mean that the version that we see in America is kind of wrapped around, as Phil was describing, some of the popular views, stereotypes, preconceptions that are America's own baggage?
Yeah, I think every live event speaks to its particular moment, right? So even no matter how traditional it sort of sees itself, it, I think, is really, its immediate message is to its audience now. And so I think it can't help but want to speak to the current generation and the contemporary moment. It just has to. That's the nature of performance.
Give us a little context, Professor Lee, for this concept of yellow face. A lot of us have heard of blackface. Does it have kind of a similar trajectory as that, or was it something a little different?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people have already mentioned, I know Phil and Georgina have already mentioned that yellowface is a long tradition. It's the performance of Asian and Middle Eastern characters by white European and American actors. And in the last decade or so, I think there's been quite a bit of attention to how it's persisted. Unlike blackface, which is always associated with the long history of blackface minstrelsy and all those offensive caricatures that produced in the 19th century and into the 20th century, yellowface wasn't really recognized as offensive or by a larger public. I think people have always sort of been a little wary of it, especially if you're Asian American. But I think it's not until the last decade, and I think Final Bow for Yellowface is really timely, that people have drawn attention to the concerns of yellowface, which have to do with stereotyping. I think on the first part, all those formulas that I think Phil outlined and also Adam Skloot outlined earlier in the program. But it also has to do with representation and how much opportunity is given to Asian American performers, actors, dancers, and the like.
I know that this is an interesting time in America, Professor Lee, in terms of dealing with cultural questions, the way that we view ourselves culturally. Really, every aspect of our culture seems very much in flux. And there are plenty of folks, including some, who've commented on our program kind of over the last few months who just feel a little windblown by the whole thing. Like, is everything that I knew wrong? Is everything from my childhood screwed up? Was I wrong for loving it then? And now you're telling me, oh, this was racist. And, oh, I've taken my children every year to go see this racist thing. What would you say to Americans in this cultural moment, Professor Lee, who just feel blown sideways through this change that's saying everything you thought you knew and loved and appreciated is not only wrong, it's racist?
That's a great comment. The earlier question about, well, you know, does this mean that, it's an Orwellian censorship moment, you know, in which we're taking everything that refers to race and trying to, you know, be so politically correct. And I think that in some ways, you know, the broader answer to that is that we really can't forget that the history of a lot of performing arts includes a lot of really offensive stereotypes. And I think that no one would argue that we don't want to go back to reproducing those, particularly inadvertently. With particular regard to the Nutcracker, you know, when I was telling a friend that I was going to talk about this on this program, I think the reaction was, no, not the Nutcracker, right? You know,
it's such Don't destroy the Nutcracker
yeah,
for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's such a beloved holiday tradition. And I think, you know, I ran into the same kind of commentary with Gilbert and Sullivan's The Mikado, which is probably the most popular of the Gilbert and Sullivan, you know, works, you know, and it's done all the time. And people are just so upset that it's seen as offensive. And so there's a kind of question about, you know, what are we trying to do here? And I think my answer would be that we're trying to make people aware of certain racial habits, right? So habits by which we represent certain groups in a racialized way. And yeah, those habits aren't necessarily conscious acts of violence. So what you're seeing in the Nutcracker isn't someone saying, oh, you know, Chinese people are bad. It's very different from some of the, say, blackface stereotypes,
right,
where you had
right,
images of slaves as ignorant and primitive and uncivilized.
And predatory. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And those are really clearly troubling. But the Nutcracker falls into that gray area, maybe a little bit like the Mikado. First of all, it's light entertainment. Secondly, it's funny and supposed to be cute in that way. And so a question I get a lot is, you know, why is this considered racist? Or,
right,
you know, even if it's considered to be about race, why is it offensive?
Hey, Professor Lee, pause on that for just one second. I have
yeah,
a quick clip from the opening song of the Mikado. Could I play that real quick and then get
absolutely,
you to react
yeah,
to that? This is the opening song of the Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, The Mikado. It's called If You Want to Know. The opening song from the Mikado entitled If You Want to Know. Here are the lyrics, by the way, because they were saying them in a very operatic way. The lyrics are, if you want to know who we are gentlemen of Japan. On many a vase and jar, on many a screen and fan, we figure in lively paint, our attitudes queer and quaint. The opening lyrics from the Mikado by Gilbert and Sullivan. Professor Lee, let me let you finish your thought, particularly the parallels between the Mikado and the Nutcracker.
So, I mean, some people would say that the Mikado is really more about England, right, Victorian Britain, than it is about Japan, right? And so that's an argument that's usually used to why it's not racially offensive. I think the logical question that comes from that is, if it was really about Victorian England, then what place does the representation of Japan have in that? And so I think it leads to this kind of long tradition of portraying Asia and the Middle East, you know, what we call Orientalism, in certain ways. And the ways that I think parallel the Nutcracker, the ways in which Japan is represented in the Mikado, are something that I sometimes say called decorative Orientalism, right? It's a kind of tendency to portray Asia as a place of beautiful and magical things, right, that Euro-Americans can own easily. And so what we have in the Nutcracker, as I think was pointed out earlier, is the scene in which, you know, the court is sitting there watching these different characters from different lands. And they're all portrayed as sort of sweetmeats or holiday commodities,
right,
in some ways. They're toys. They're objects. And so I think it is cute and it is wonderful, but it's also not really indicative of any kind of self-representation or power on the part of those people, right? The people
right,
are presented as if they're light entertainment and exotic food rather than as humans.
Brandon wrote on our Facebook page, what about productions that don't have Asian dancers due to there not being an Asian population in the area? Are those productions to forego having the tea dance? Phil, I know we're really low on time, but what would you say to Brandon?
Absolutely not. I think we are not advocating cutting the Chinese dance. I think we're merely saying that let's make better choices with what we've already got.
Phil Chan, the co-founder of the Final Bow for Yellowface campaign. Phil, thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Georgina Pasgogin, known in the ballet world as the Rogue Ballerina, a soloist with the New York City Ballet. Thanks, Georgina.
Thank you so much for having me.
And University of Minnesota Professor Josephine Lee. Professor Lee, thank you.
Thank you.
You can learn more about the changes Ballet West made in a video on our website, the1a.org. This conversation was produced by Danielle Knight. To learn more about her and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.